Hi, everyone. I am not Leo Rossi. I'm Matty Stout. I'm the president and founder of Jam Street Media, the company that produces Deep Cover featuring Leo Rossi and Mr. Joe Pistone. And today we're kind of flipping things around on them. I'm going to be interviewing these two guys about their lives and careers together, what they love about each other, what they hate about each other, all kinds of things. I've had a lot of fun working with these guys over the past year. This all came to be a year ago. I get a phone call from this guy from Philly, and he says, "Hey, we've all heard you're a stand-up guy doing podcasts. How'd you like to do something with Joe Pistone?" And I said, "Absolutely, that'll be fantastic. I don't know who told you I was a stand-up guy, but thank them for lying at least." It's been a pleasure and such a treat to work with Joe and Leo over the past year, so it's going to be fun to ask them some questions. Joe and Leo, thanks for letting me take over your show today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's welcomed. It's welcomed. Now the gavel will fall on you, not me, from Mr. Pistone. Mr. Pistone.
So, you know, I do want to know how you all met. But first of all, I wanted to know more about when you were younger. So we know that Joe, you were an athlete. Leo, I had to imagine that you were the guy in class that the teacher couldn't get to shut up.
Well, in grammar school, I was motor mouth. And in high school, I was Radio Rossi. So, yeah, that's it. And then I got into doing radio in college. But, yeah, you hit that one on the head. Like my dear friend out here, Bobby Costanzo, says, Leo could talk to an artichoke. Okay, so you get an idea.
What was your show like when you did radio? If we were going to listen to the Leo, what would you call it? Radio Rossi? What were you heard back then?
It was called, you remember the song by the Routers, Let's Go? Dun, 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 dun. Let's go.
Oh, yeah, I'm not that old. No.
Well, Joe remembers. Anyway, it was called Let's Go with Leo. Do you want me to give it a little taste? Yes, it's me, your bumblebee, your uptight stinger, out of sight swinger, saying come one, come all, we're going to have a ball in a hall. Want to see your face in a place? You can holler for a dollar, because I'm too hot to be stopped, too smooth to be moved, too high to get over, and too wide to get around. Yeah.
They don't do radio like that anymore.
No, they don't.
They should.
I know. They did it in Philly back in the day. I worked with High Lit at WIBG when Joe Niagara was the station manager. He was a cool guy. And, you know, I could introduce records. They gave me the thing. The scene is set. The smoke has cleared. And there appears the miracle of Robinson. Smokey Robinson in the mirror. Yeah, I do that stuff. Come on, fellas. It's the Vandellas. Martha Reeves, if you please. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, anyway.
One of these days, we'll have to have a contest to see who. It's called Hitting the Post. To people that don't know radio, it's when you talk over the music and you end right when the song starts singing.
And ooh, yeah.
For those of us that did radio back when we were albums and we didn't have a countdown clock, you had to know how long things were. I bet Leo, you were pretty good at that back then.
I was. And the Young Rascals, Lovin', you know, some, it stops and I could get WWVU right in between, you know, it was cool.
Joe, do you think you and Leo would have been good pals back in the day?
Oh, definitely. You know, Leo, what I like about Leo is honesty. I mean, Leo cannot, if he tried to tell a lie, it wouldn't work. I mean, it's just his nature. He's just an honest, forthwith come guy. I mean, and that's why we've been friends for 22 years, because I don't like to suffer fools and bullshit. And that's what I like about Leo. He talks a lot, but he doesn't bullshit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, I do know what you mean. And my wife always tells me that she knows I'll never cheat on her because I can't look her in the eye and not tell her a lie. I'm terrible at it.
In that same vein, I trust Joe. I trust him with my life. I trust him in any lifetime that we met. Back in the old ages, you know, he's more than a friend. I mean, he's got your back, and even if you're not there, he's got your back, you know, which is a big thing. And yeah.
Let's talk about that first time you met. where did you meet? What were the circumstances and what were your initial impressions of each other? Joe, I want to hear from you first. What did you think?
Well, we both have a mutual friend, and we've mentioned him before on the show, Bobby Maresco, who's a writer, director. I knew Bobby for several years. Bobby's from New York. He's from the West Side. Bobby was writing a television show about me. It was called Falcone for CBS. Down in L.A. with Bobby, the other writer was Kenny Solars. We were going through actors to participate in the TV series. And we needed a lawyer, you know, a shady lawyer, a mob lawyer, a crooked lawyer. And Bobby said, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine. I said, hey, Bobby, you know, it's like the old a friend of mine, a friend of ours, a friend of yours. I said, Bobby, if he's a good friend of yours, I'm sure I'll like him. So we arranged I don't remember if it was lunch, breakfast, or dinner or whatever. And
he had food involved.
We had food. Yeah. There's always food involved when there's myself, Leo, and Maresco. So there's always food involved. So that's how it came about. And as soon as I met him, after about 10 minutes, I said, you know, you fucking talk a lot, pal, but I like it.
He actually said that. Yes, he did.
And Leo, were you, Joe is Joe. He, you know, the first time I talked to Joe was intimidated. Were you intimidated when the first time you met Joe?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first met Joe, right away, I knew he was a tough guy. Now, I knew the Donnie Brasco legend and I knew all of that, but you meet somebody and you get your, and I said, this guy's a tough guy. Now, what I mean by that, well, what did he have it imprinted on his head? No, the way he carries himself and just the way he moves and the way he holds his hands, I know that Joe knows what it's feel like. What 98% of the people in the country don't know what it's feel like to get punched in the face, to get punched in the mouth, to get punched in the ears, or conversely, to punch somebody in the mouth, punch somebody in the face. It's a whole thing. You know that he would drop hands in a heartbeat. And I said, oh, I had a few skirmishes myself, but I wish he was back to back with me. I probably would have done better, you know. And then when he comes out in the show and he tells me over the air that, yeah, he had to beat up these two guys. They robbed he and Lefty. And he had a roll of dimes. When he hit them, he had the roll of dimes in his hand. These kids, they probably haven't woke up yet.
Leo, I can see you as being the kind of guy who would, maybe not on purpose, but start a lot of fights.
Yes.
Yeah. And have tough friends who would not let, you know, can't let, nobody lets the funny guy get beat up. I mean, that's.
Yes, of course.
Speaking from experience. So you guys meet, and then, you know, how does this progression of go from being friends to having this working relationship together? And wanting to work on projects together after that first project?
Well, you know, I had a lot of respect for Joe, just on what he did with his life. And I met his family in different stages. And I knew we had the same values. He's, you know, he goes to church, I go to church. You know, we raised our kids and we're proud of that. And we're family guys and stuff like that. Even though I have digested, my wife calls him the hunk, and he calls her the hunkess. So I said, that's all right. What the hell? It don't hurt nobody. It don't hurt nobody. We're all friends. But where we really plugged in was Maresco and I were talking about Joe wrote a book, The Way of the Wise Guy. And we said, boy, that would make a great one-man show. You know, it's got all these elements, and we could use backdrops of guys coming in and out, but basically it was a one-man show. And we said, let's pitch it to Joe. And he, you know, he was a little hesitant, and then he was responsive. And then he said, who's playing me? Now, I knew it was going to come to that. And Bobby didn't say a damn word, that little chicken shit. He didn't say nothing. And I finally said, well, that would be me, Joe.
So what did you think about that, Joe? When that, I mean, your first gut was, Was it good or bad?
No, actually, it was good because, I mean, I know Leo's work. You know, I've seen him act in, you know, his movies. And I mean, I knew he was good. I knew he was a good actor. And I knew that he was a hard worker. So I knew it was going to work with him. And it did. You know, we spent a lot of time writing the show, rehearsing, and Leo did a hell of a job. And I don't think we could have made a better choice of an actor to do it. And you know, when you're with somebody every day, you know, it's like when you're with the wise guys every day, you see good in everybody, you know, in somebody when you and you know, we were together every day for what, 14, 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, writing, rehearsing.
Oh, yeah. Yep, all the time. For 4.5 months, yep.
And you get to, you know, you really get to know a person. And then from there, we had a project. I had a project came my way about an undercover FBI case, which I thought we could translate into a pretty good movie. Talked to Leo about it because it dealt with the Philadelphia crew, the Philadelphia that took place in Philly. And I know Leo, you know, spent a lot of time in Philly, from Philly, New Philly. Discuss it with him. We got again Maresco. We got Bobby Maresco to write it and direct it. So, you know, now you're spending another 4 or 5 months with somebody. And that's how we clicked. I don't think in 22 years, we've had any disagreements on anything. We worked on, you know, several movies together, TV shows. In fact, we had the highest rated TV show on, what was that station?
Hallmark.
Hallmark.
Yeah.
We had some, you know, we had differences, but not, they were, you know, about characters, et cetera, but we never had a disagreement that came to, you know, well, F you or F you, you know, one of those disagreements, which you get into a lot with friends, even with friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I never heard, you know, you fucking moron. No, and I would never, well, you know, we respect each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can have differences and everything like that. But look, with Joe, you know where he stands. That's just the... I'll tell you something that it was pedigree, Joe. And when you start to really know him and you hear somebody, he said he doesn't suffer fools. And you see somebody make a real asshole remark. I just sit back and say, oh, it's coming. It's coming. So we're in a production meeting for a reality show. And we're in there. We were going to be the executive producers. Joe was going to be the host. And we were with the guys from the company, the producing company. And we were taking a lunch break. And they bring lunch in and everything. So one guy's eating up. And he says, hey, Joe, did you ever kill anybody? No. The room went dead silence. And Leo went, oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Joe puts his sandwich down, stares this guy dead in the eyes. And says, what do you think? The guy damn near swallowed his oh, it was beautiful.
Leo, you told me that you called Joe the dictator when you did the play together. Why is that? Why is Joe a dictator?
If I chowed down for lunch, or if I had two glasses of wine after the performance, right? He goes, yeah, it's enough. What do you mean that's enough? Maybe I want another glass. I don't want you looking puffy. I don't want you looking puffy on stage. Jesus, Mary. But he was, they called us in Chicago, Joe and I, the Armo twins. Now, that means in the streets, you always taste, something tastes better if you get it on the arm, on the cuff, a freebie, right? Man. We were like tornadoes in Chicago. We didn't even bother to reach in our pocket. We knew it was going to be picked up.
Joe, having worked in, you know, your background in law enforcement and then moving into the industry, the entertainment industry, lots of differences. But what kind of stuff is the same? Like, do you feel that, is kind of that your life working in law enforcement prepared you for your life in entertainment.
Well, you know, it in both professions, there's a lot of deception, you know. The only difference is that in the on the street, these guys, they don't mind telling you that they're gangsters, you know. But in the entertainment business, they hide behind, you know, you got some gangsters that hide behind being entertainment people. And I'm pretty good at reading people from my, you know, 27 years in law enforcement. So, you know, I was pretty good at reading bullshit artists at production meetings. And like I say, I remember one movie, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I was brought in to be the technical advisor on this FBI movie. We're at the production meeting, and the star of the movie wasn't there. So, you know, everybody goes around and introduces each other and what you do and what, you know. One of the producers says, after I introduce myself, who I am, et cetera, et cetera, he said, you're not to talk to so-and-so. I said, what do you mean? He said, no, you can't talk. And so-and-so is the star of the movie. Now, I'm the technical advisor, and this so-and-so is playing an FBI agent. So I said, who am I supposed to talk to? He says, well, you come to me. I go to the director, and director, you know. I get up, and I says, well, I fucking quit. Got up and start walking out. Start a movie now, comes in, and we're passing each other. And he said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm leaving. I just quit this movie. He said, who are you? Because I had never met him. So I told him. He said, why'd you quit? I said, because I'm told that I wasn't supposed to talk to you. He says, get the F over there and sit down. Who told you that? I said, it doesn't make any difference who told me. You know, I said, if I'm the technical advisor and I can't talk to you, what do I need to be here for? So, you know, but we worked it out, and I spent every day with him, every day on the set and every night, dinner, et cetera, et cetera. But that's, you know, and it's the same thing with the mob. If you're too close to your captain, somebody else in the crew is going to be jealous of you because they figure you're getting some extra bennies that they're not getting. And to me, it was the same thing here. This guy didn't want me to get close to the actor. And, you know, I said, hey, look, what you guys here do is acting. You get 10 takes to do something. In my profession, you get one. And if you don't get it right, you're dead. So I don't, you know, I'm not here to please anybody, to kiss anybody's ass, because actors are actors. That's the way it goes. And we got along pretty good.
You know, he hits on something that is, and Matty, you have been in this business a long time. Radio, it's, you know, it's media, movies, TV, whatever. And if somebody pinned me down and said, what do you hate about this business? It's the fragile fucking egos. They are just, you can't, everybody's, you know, trying to interpret things over this, and they take slights at the most minute things. And Joe and I, we ain't like that. You know, you tell me, but and they hold grudges and everything like that. You know, I mean, I learned that pretty early on in the theater. You know, I dealt with it because, you know, when you go on stage, it's all you, baby. The director can't walk on stage. Nobody, they can't stop it. In movies and TV, I'll tell you, and I'll even mention the guy's name, Stephen Bochco. He did Hill Street Blues. He did L.A. Law. He did so many series, right? The guy from Pittsburgh. He was Duquesne guy. I was hot at the time, and I had come off doing Heart Like a Wheel, got all the critics things. And I did the first three episodes of the second season of Hill Street Blues, and it won all the Emmys, right? And I played, they called him John Gennaro, it was Robert, based on Robert De Niro, who always wanted to get into the characters and get really, and I went on a drug bust that I shouldn't have gone on. I show up and I get killed in the third episode of the first three seasons. And I got a lot of notoriety and everything. But Stephen Bochco, the producer, they call him showrunner. I didn't wear sunglasses in a scene. And he had said that he wanted me to wear. And the director mentioned to him, I said, but why? That calls more attention to me in a diner in the morning than somebody that's not, you know. And he said, all right, okay, let's go with it. Well, no, come to be 2 days later, but Bochco saw the dailies. That's, you know, whatever was filmed today. And the director said up to me and he says, you know what? You almost got me fired. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? He said, those sunglasses, man. I said, what sunglasses? What did it? I explained it. He says, no, Bochco said he said to do it and you didn't do it. I said, oh boy. Bochco later that day comes on the set because his wife was in it and I had a scene with her. He goes right there. It was like I was a bug that I wasn't even there. And he would never, and I know I got accolades for playing that the three-part thing, pushing me for the Emmys and everything. Guess what? He would never bring me in for his last six series that he did. Never even see me for an audition. Fragile egos, you know?
You know what I've noticed, though, is that the really good ones, they like it when you tell them things and like put a... My first radio, big radio job was, I was G. Gordon Liddy's producer. And I got there and everybody said, you got to be really careful. He's, you know, everybody's scared of Gordon. You know, he had this reputation. You guys know who Gordon Liddy is. Younger folks don't. Well, I didn't know any better. So I'd go in and talk back to Gordon all the time. And I'd tell him, hey, you're not doing this right. And that worked out really well. He loved me. And that made my whole career, actually. Like, after that, everybody kept hiring me because they were like, well, if you can get Gordon Liddy in line, then he can do just about anybody. That's what I think about in the business is just, you know, you have these frail egos, but I always find it's from people who then aren't confident.
Yeah.
Because the confident ones, they want you to tell them, like, you know, like Joe said, like, hey, I know what I'm doing here. Yeah. You don't. So either listen to me or I'll go walk. So speaking of the entertainment industry, what we're talking here, you know, as Italian Americans, myself included, I kind of like that. When you tell people you're Italian, they're immediately like, oh, mafia, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, and you've made a nice career out of that. But is there part of you that wishes that wasn't always the case, that people didn't always, you know, as soon as they hear Italian-American, they go to The Sopranos, they go to The Godfather, they, you know, they don't talk about, you know, like my grandfather who's a marble miner and came from Italy. That's not what the storyline is. So what do you feel about that?
Well, me, it doesn't bother me at all, to be honest with you. Because, you know, I'm secure and I know who I am. I know who my family is or, you know, my grandparents were. So to me, I never got upset with it. And I've been asked a lot of questions a lot of times. Well, you know, did you go against the mafia because of the stain that they brought on the Italians? And the answer is no. I went against the mafia because that was the organized crime group that we were targeted. If it was the Chinese, it would have been the Chinese. If it was the Colombians, but, you know, we just that operation happened to be against the Italians. It didn't make any difference to me.
You know, what my father was, he's, I'm a pimple on his ass. Trust me. This guy was the best. And everybody loved Joe Rossi, and he had a business with the two other fellas, where they manufactured compactors, balers, trash truck bodies, containers, things like that in South Jersey, in Herfville, actually. So when I got out of school, I went to 1 year law school. Then I went to work with him, you know, because law ain't my thing. I don't know what a fucking easement is even now. But so I went to work with him and everything. And hey, I had to go into AMP, you know, to get the big orders. And I could. I had the gift of gab, Allied stores and everything. And all right, did I play up the Italian a little bit? Yeah, because at that time, Joe, you would remember this. The AMP wouldn't take either a tomato sauce or something. And the mob was grabbing managers of AMP stores. Managers. The guys had nothing to do, and they were never seen again. And they did it after five different managers went, and then they put the sauce in there, okay? But one thing, I got a call. That's... Oh, Joe, you remember that, right?
Yep. Now, hold on. Leo, before you go any further, Maddie, do you call it sauce or gravy?
Gravy.
Now, why do you call it gravy? Leo just said sauce.
Well, gravy... gravy's got meat in it. All right. So okay. I always have meat. Right,
there you go. That's gravy. The ultimate debate, right, Joe? It's
like, you know. What do you call it, Joe?
Well, if it's meat, it's gravy, but there's the sauce. You know, we went back and forth, actually.
Yeah, it was the sauce. But
I say sauce. I think the younger, like my generation says sauce, but with meat, gravy. But like my grandparents said
gravy for everything.
You know, and... Yeah.
Because they're also West Virginia Italians. So
listen, I've been with people in Louisiana Italians, and it's just a little weird the way they talk, but they are as Italian as I am, man. You know. So what happened with my father? I get a call 7 o'clock one morning, and the guy says, "Hey, how are you? I'm not going to take you to breakfast. Stay about boom boom." Anyway, it was Sam the Plumber Di Cavalcante who ruled Jersey, his section of Jersey. Sam the Plumber, he was in a plumbing business.
Okay? The Cavalcante family.
Yep, that's right. So, you know, he says, have a breakfast. I said, let me go have breakfast with him, right? And he was sitting across from him. He was actually, I thought I was sitting across from my father. And they were the same age. They went to high school together. And I said, look at this. This guy's getting a bad rap, right? So I go into my, you know, I guess, Pop, you know, I had breakfast with this morning. Now, my father never hit me except this once. I said, Sam the Plumber. Bing! He hit me on my ear, slapped me on my ear. When I do a role where I have to show pain, I just do a sense memory of that because he whacked me. I said, what? What the hell? What'd you do? And then he read something from an excerpt of a book that they had Sam on tape. They put this guy, I don't know, he owed the money, and they put him on a meat hook, and they wetted him down, and they would hit he was about 300-pound guy, hit him with the prods, and every time they hit him, he would go up and land on it again a different way. And, you know, the glamour went right out. He said they're vipers, and they will steal from anyone. And when push comes to shove, they will kill you. Okay.
My aunt, who became the mayor, bookie, and pharmacist of a little town that all the Italians were in West Virginia, where my family's from, she would tell me stories about when she was a kid, you'd see some guy show up in West Virginia in a really sharp suit. And you would know somebody fucked up. Yeah. And they had to come down to West Virginia. But the same kind of thing, which is like, you stay away from those guys. That's not the guys you want to be hanging out with at all. I love this word. Leo sent me this word. And this is the word that I don't use, but I'm going to start using more often. It's peccadillo, which I looked up, which means a slight but forgivable sin in someone. And I wanted to know, on both sides, Leo, what are Joe's peccadillos? And then Joe, I want you to tell me about Leo's.
Well,
a peccadillo.
I tell you, I don't know about peccadillos, but you know, we're out of town shooting a movie. All right, now if the call time's like at 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. What does a guy do? He gets up in the morning, he brushes his teeth, he throws on a baseball hat, right? Throws on some sweats, goes down and gets his coffee and breakfast. You know? And then you go upstairs and you take your shower and everything, right? Well, so any normal guy, what is it? 10 minutes? You jump out of bed, you throw on your sweats, you brush your teeth. You know, you comb your hair a little bit, you throw on your baseball cap, and you're downstairs in 10 minutes. Well, now Leo, he's got to get up. He's got to do his face. He's got to do his hair. He's got to make sure everything is perfect. I say, Leo, just put on a effing baseball hat and your sweats and get your ass down here and throw on a pair of sneakers. That's what guys do. They don't primp and, you know, before they go down to get a cup of coffee in the morning. That's and then other than talking your ear off, that's the two picadillos or picadillos, whatever the hell that word is you're saying, Maddie, that Leo has.
All right, now is it my turn?
And Leo, I need you to say the word because it sounds beautiful coming out of your mouth. Like when I say it, it doesn't sound as pretty as when Leo.
Would you like to know Joe's picadillos? All right. First of all, his punctuality is so on the friggin' money. If you're supposed to be there at 8 o'clock, he's there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And you look at, you feel less that he has reached down and came there early to do. And I said, boy, that's good. The razor sharp creases in his pants drive me nuts. He has razor sharp creases in his pants. It's like this. And, oh, you talk about a good cup of coffee. He'll make you walk 30 blocks for a good cup of coffee. I don't drink coffee. I keep telling him, come on with me. Okay. I mean, let's see what else. Oh, and another thing. This guy here, Mr. Pistone, he never finishes the food on his plate. That's why he's the same friggin' weight he is when he was in high school that he is now. And I clean my plate and then some. All right, that's enough.
Wow, I felt like that was a therapy for you. You got all that out.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with more Deep Cover.
All right, I want to talk about the podcast because, you know, for a lot of folks, this is a very new thing. You know, podcasting is new media. Past 3 years, it's grown 54%. It's amazing. I've been doing this quite a while and been waiting for this time to come for about 10 years. But it's here now. But you guys embraced this and got into podcasting, This podcast, people are hearing it now, but this has been in the process for over a year and a half, almost 2 years. So, you know, what is it about podcasting that you enjoy that makes you, you know, happy? Because I know both of you really enjoy doing this. Anyone who listens can tell you enjoy doing this. What is it about podcasting that
likes? Well, Joe, you want to go?
No, go ahead.
Well, to me, and the highest compliment that we get is that people are feeling like they're sitting down with us and having a beer or a cup of coffee. To me, that's what it's about. And I look forward to it. I mean, I do. You know, and a podcast came along at the time, especially now with the COVID and everything like that, that they're not making movies. And for me, sanitize, you know, for my sanity, not sanitize. See how we're so programmed? But for my sanity, this was terrific fun. I mean, we worked hard and you know, we tried not to be repetitive. We work with Camille, our executive producer, Camille Stennis.
What I like about it, Maddie, is it's not scripted. Our podcast, Deep Cover, is not scripted. What we do is Leo says, all right, give me a bunch of topics, you know, regarding your 27 years in the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I do. And then he decides which ones for that, you know, 35 minutes that we're going to discuss. And we don't discuss them beforehand. He comes up and so, like I say, it's I like that. Because I don't like to go off I don't like to go off a script. It's like we're sitting next to each other over a cup of coffee, talking about whatever we're talking about for that 35 minutes. And that's what I like about it.
So I will say for us, working with the two of you, what's been great for me is I like people who work and want to work and want to be better and you know, strive to be good at their craft. And both of you are those human beings. We have other folks. I've worked with other folks who, you know, I don't appreciate the work ethic. I really appreciate your work ethic. And she doesn't get on the show a lot, but Camille, I know you're there and you've got a mic in front of you. Your executive producer, Camille. Camille, what do you like about working with Leo and Joe, and what's been kind of some of your favorite parts about the process so far?
Oh, surprised. That's okay. I can edit anything out because that's my job. I love how easy it is to work with Leo and Joe. You know, they're both naturally just so dynamic and charismatic through the microphone. And even I'm sure Leo through your own career and Joe through your own, you know, people can attest to the same thing. My favorite thing about the entire process is that, yes, we get to finally hear this other side to your guys' story and relationship. And I think it is like sitting down, having a cup of coffee with just two wholesome guys with an amazing story. I love working with you two.
Wow. Right back at you, darling.
You know, and a lot of the people that I know that listen to it, they say, how do you and Leo, how are you doing this together? They really think that we're actually sitting across the table from each other.
It's been amazing to keep everything going during this time. And you know, we started recording the new episodes for the season in June. So it was right when we were in the middle of COVID and getting everybody through the technology it's been okay sometimes not, but we've gotten through
it down now. Thanks to Camille.
I like to always end with these three questions. I pull three questions out and ask folks. And the first question I'm going to ask both of you for the three questions is, if you could listen to a podcast featuring anybody living or dead, anybody, any combination of people, you could put them in a room and listen to them do a podcast. Who would you like to listen to? I'll give you a second to think.
Well, I can tell you who I wouldn't want to do one with. Bob De Niro. Oh, there would be pauses you could drive a Mack truck through. Oh, God. And he happens to be an acquaintance of mine. I'm sorry. But anyway. Okay. So, yeah, so Joe.
That's not really the spirit of the question, Leo.
You know, I don't think it would be a politician, so I'm ruling people out here. I'll tell you who I really believe, if you can break through the exterior, stand-up comedians. Because stand-up comedians, the ones that I know that are really great, they got a whole lot of pain and a whole lot of anger, you know? And to try to break through that, you know, when they just let them go, say, hey, man, you know, you don't have to do your act now, and let them put that down. It'd be interesting for me.
I think that would be, for me, I would like to hear Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor do a podcast together. There you go. There's your comedians I put together.
Yeah.
I would laugh my ass off.
I don't have to go with that.
Yeah.
I like to hear guys like maybe Gale Sayers, who
R.I.P.
Unfortunately, I think he just passed away. But, you know, with his take on how he became such a great running back, a coach like Tom Landry.
Nice. I got to ask this question, though, Joe. If you could put any two or three of the guys that you put in jail or ran around with in those days, who would be the funniest to do a podcast, do you think?
The funniest?
Or the most interesting, you know, is it Sonny Black? Is it Lefty?
Well, Lefty would really keep everybody on their toes, on edge of their seats. The funniest probably would have been Nicky Santoro, because he normally was funny. I mean, you know, he would come up with some pretty good sayings. You get a history on the mob. I'd like to sit down and go back and forth with Ruggiero. Lefty, because he knew the mob, he knew the history, and he'd be a no holds barred I don't think there'd be any filter on him.
Joe, how about you got to give him a little taste? Because we'll deal with this guy in the second season. Luigi.
Oh, Luigi Ronz.
That's my dad's
Luigi.
Name.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. When we talk about Luigi, people are going to say, there really was a guy like that? I mean, Luigi was a legitimate hitman. One of his hits, like, you know, I'll just give you a quick, he got the contract to hit a guy. The guy was a chef in a restaurant. He walks in a restaurant and he says, hey, who's Pasquale whatever? The guy says, me. Bang. He walked out. That's it.
Oh, man. That does not sound like my dad.
Oh, great.
I think in my dad's village, everybody's named Luigi or Telio. Yeah. Like, everyone. Yeah. The whole town. So, second question of the three. Gangster, you guys have mentioned this before, but what if you had one favorite gangster movie, which one is it?
After Donnie Brasco, of course. Yes, of course.
It goes without saying. Of course.
Well, you know, I like The Godfather. Leo and I, you know, it's funny you mention it, Maddie, because today, I think it was today, on a New York radio station, Chaz Palminteri was on, and they asked him top mob movies, and it was The Godfather, Goodfellas, what was the other one, Leo?
Oh, the other one was Goodfellas.
Rochdale and Donnie Brasco.
Rochdale,
and Donnie Brasco. But I think Leo put it the best. You can't compare any movies with The Godfather, because The Godfather was like an opera. It was like an opera. Donnie Brasco, Bronx Tale, and Goodfellas, that's the way these guys really are. That's the real, real mob.
Yeah, everything was just perfect with that movie. In fact, every scene was like a movie unto itself, you know? I think what bothers Joe and I are, you know, when all the Goombas get Goombai. You know, and that gets a little old. But I will say, and I was in this movie, and I really think it's funny, and it does. De Niro on Analyze This. They've been after him to get it, and after him, Billy Crystal been after him. And he said, all right, I know what the joke is here. And the joke is me, my character, guys like me. He said, but if we're going to do it, we're going to do it honest. There's going to be all the fuck yous, all of this, all of that, and then I'll do it. And I'll be damned if I never thought he would do comedy, you know, and he was brilliant. And the movie stands alone, you know, for a mob comedy.
All right, one more. This is the final question. Italians, we always like to talk and end on food. You two, you get your final meal together. What's on the table?
Oh, my God. Ragione. Pasta.
Ragione.
Eggplant.
Okay. We're very close on this.
I wish people could see Joe smiling right now, but, like, I've never seen him smile like that.
Oh, no.
Like, made him happy.
He and his Italian food, that's the affair, you know. But
yeah. He
just said something that got me saying, I when I was writing the Gotti movie, Junior Gotti and everything, and he said the same thing. Oh, what do you like? What do you like? I love Bruchel. Now, if 3 weeks later he has a Sunday dinner, he said, I'm making this for you. I'm making Bruchel. Now, Bruchel ain't easy to make. It's like the flank steak wrapped around the eggs and this and that. So I go over there, and my wife was with me. I can't even cut the damn thing, much less put it in my mouth. And I'm sawed away. I finally put it in my mouth, and I know that's 10 minutes chewing. And it was a horrible meal. But Bajol and a good sausage, pepper, and onions, you know, we don't put it in a piece of bread or something like that. And hey, do you remember Frankie Borda, Joe?
Yeah,
when he made us the scungili.
Oh, my God.
With the spicy scungili. Oh, my Lord. Hey, listen, Until I was 17 years old, I thought my first name was Bacala. Which is a salty fish, right. Okay?
Yeah. Hey, Matt, I'd like to give a shout out to our other partner, John Mosier.
Who, MBB.
John's the one who I got that first call from, yep. and set all of this up, and he's been fantastic. I think I need to do an interview with John sometime, because I know he's got
and some he's been right there with us through the whole 2 years.
Yep.
Joe, Leo, this has been fun. I hope we can do this again.
Yep. Yeah, without a doubt, man. I mean, same place, same station, and we will take it from there. All right, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Looking forward to the next season.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Deep Cover, The Real Donnie Brasco, with us here at Jam Street Media and MBB Productions. Stay tuned for more bonus content in the upcoming second season. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts to be the first to know.
From Jam Street Media.